On a Monday, it is the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Thanks for being here. We are covering ground with our lieutenant governor today. We'll touch down on legislative priorities before lawmakers head back to their districts and his work on the governor's task force on climate change. So what questions do you have for the lieutenant governor after his first year in office? What do you want to know? What issues do you think the state should be working to address? You have a line, 800-642-1234. Mandela Barnes is the lieutenant governor of Wisconsin and a former state representative from Milwaukee. Lieutenant Governor Barnes, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Hey, good morning. Thanks for having me back.
Well, let's start with MLK Day. You were born in 1986. That was the first year that MLK Day was celebrated, and that was 18 years after his assassination. Looking back on your own experiences, your own career, what did MLK and the civil rights movement mean to you personally?
Well, it means a lot to me personally. I mean, I obviously would not have made it to this position if it were not for the fight of so many others in generations before me, people who put so much on the line in cases like Martin Luther King, their own lives. And also just the inspiration. You think about the challenges that we do face today. They are very significant challenges, and it shows how much further we still have to go. And many times it can be easy for us to get frustrated, get downtrodden. But the resistance to change is not as apparent. It's not as brutal as it was at that point in time. It's different. It's more systemic. It's more surgical. But at the same time, it gives us hope to think about it. They could have overcome so much during the civil rights era. If Dr. Martin Luther King and so many others could have paved the way to drive the change across the entire United States, then we can do it too, and we have to. We have a we have an obligation to do so, to create that great society. We are, you know, getting better, and I always, you know, say that we are mid stride in this march towards justice and this march towards equity. And it's not one that's ever done either. It's not like you get to a certain place and you put everything up and say, all right, our job is done. You wipe your hands and go away. You keep progressing. You keep moving forward. And that's always my message to the youth as well.
Change is more surgical today. What do you mean by that?
Well, you look at the barriers that are more systemic, right? You look at while people aren't getting hosed, people aren't having, you know, dogs sicked on them. There isn't legally enforced segregation, but there are other barriers that exist that limit opportunities for so many people. You think about the way schools are funded, and if lower income neighborhoods aren't able to fund their schools at the same amount as higher income school districts, it creates a disparity. And even in our criminal justice system, while there's no law that explicitly states that African Americans will go to jail while their white counterparts won't, the data is there that suggests that there is something very deeply ingrained within the criminal justice system that we all have to work to resolve.
As a leader in state government, you could be seen yourself as a role model to many young people of color today. Do you think about that? Does that weigh on you?
I do think about that, and it does weigh on me. Every time I show up to a school, I think about how that could have been me sitting in that chair, and how my life is not much different than most of the students that I talk to. Growing up, the experiences that I had, the schools that I attended, neighborhoods that I lived in. And I want to be a reminder, because this wasn't something that was on my mind. It's not something that's on the minds of many children. However, there weren't even really many examples when I was growing up, and there still aren't a lot of it. There still aren't, you know, an overwhelming amount of examples, but there are more and more. And if I can be that for some student that is trying to find their way, some student that's growing up in circumstances that may otherwise inhibit their full potential, and I can remind them that there is so much more for you to aspire to, then I'm all for it. And I think that's many times what students need, and also what we expect of our children. I think that is another thing that we should take into consideration. It's not what the examples that they see, but how we perceive what their ability is. And for us to go and say, hey, you know, we expect great things from you because great things are possible. And if you show up on the other hand and say you just expect some abstract thing, then kids are going to be lost.
We're talking about Martin Luther King Jr. Day with Wisconsin's Lieutenant Governor Mandela Barnes is with us. What issues in state politics do you think MLK would be talking about today? What do you think are Wisconsin's most pressing civil rights issues? How do you approach this day? Are you going to any events? We're at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Let's bring in a call now. Mary Kay is joining us from Kenosha this morning. Hi, Mary Kay.
Good morning, everyone. Mr. Barnes, I'd like to address income segregation. And what I'd like to talk about is we have WIDA housing that needs fixing up. People pay thousands of dollars a year to live in housing, and they're all concentrated in certain areas. And the apartments need to be fixed, okay? The second one is people need a car to go to work. If you don't have a car to go to work anymore, you don't even have a job because they want you on demand. So we need some kind of low-income loans. The jail loans don't work because they're too high for families to afford. That's a state loan. So we need some cars for a cash for clunkers program, and we need some cars, you know, loans that are low income.
Mary Kay, thanks for the call. So she's specifically looking at housing and also looking at transportation. Mm-hmm. Lieutenant Governor?
Yeah, housing is very important, and that's why, you know, I'm confident in leader that we have over at WIDA now.
And that's the Wisconsin Economic Development Association.
Sorry.
No, that's okay. Go
sorry
ahead.
Mm-hmm. And the new executive director over at WIDA, he is from Milwaukee, someone who understands a lot of the same concerns that you just shared. And it's important for us to think about how income segregation just leads to overall segregation. And the report just showed that we are the most segregated state in the nation. And also, we have the most stark lines when it comes to income between blacks and whites who live in the state of Wisconsin. So this is an issue of vital importance because we can't move forward as a state, we can't move forward as a society with this sort of disparity. When this kind of dichotomy exists between residents who, you know, live within the same borders, it's going to pose a more significant problem, and it leads to other issues. And when it gets as bad as it gets, when you look down from generation to generation to generation, it's where we get to deal with the other problems that we have. And that's why, you know, schools get underfunded. And ultimately, what can work to lead to our balloon prison population. All these things work together. None of these things exist in a bubble. And that's what I try to get people to understand, whether it's income or there's housing. And on the issue of cars, you know, I am a strong proponent of expanding mass transportation, right? I think that we should move towards regional transit models to make it more efficient so that people can be connected to jobs, people can be connected to other activities, leisure, and recreation as well. I think we are very far behind as a state when it comes to mass transportation.
Well, that also means funding the transportation budget in order to get that mass transportation that you're talking about.
We absolutely need funding. That's why I consistently call on our lawmakers on the other side of the aisle to address public transportation for the priority that it is. If we can't, you know, be a state of the 21st century with the level of public transportation that we have. You look west to Minnesota, their public transportation is much better. You look to the south in Illinois, public transportation is a lot better than it is here, and the options are far greater. And that was a move. I mean, you can even look back at 2010 in December when Governor Walker rejected the high-speed rail money, which I cannot tell you how much I appreciate the Derail podcast. I just give a quick plug to the listeners if you haven't.
Thank you for
Derail,
that plug. And Lieutenant Governor, we need to pause right there. You have a line, 800-642-1234. Back in a moment. More State Cap right here on the Ideas Network. You're with us for the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Programming note here, join us Wednesday evening at 7 for live coverage of Governor Evers' State of the State Address. Our coverage will be hosted by WPR's Capitol Bureau Chief Sean Johnson and PBS Wisconsin's Frederica Freiberg. Governor Evers will highlight priorities for 2020 before a joint session of the legislature in the state capitol building. And State Senator Roger Roth will give the Republican response following the address. That's Wednesday evening at 7 right here on the Ideas Network. Right now, we're talking with Lieutenant Governor Mandela Barnes, looking back at his first year in office, looking ahead at his priorities for this year. Your questions in the mix. After last year's state budget, what are your biggest priorities for state government? What issues should the Evers administration prioritize? Join in 800-642-1234. You can tweet us, WPR Mornings. And Lieutenant Governor Mandela Barnes stays with us. Let's go back to the phones now. Thomas is joining us from Madison this morning. Hi, Thomas.
Good morning, Lieutenant Governor Barnes. I want you to know, first and foremost, I voted for you and for Governor Evers, and I am a state employee. But there was some controversy during the campaign as to whether or not you had actually earned your bachelor's degree. I want to know, have you completed that? And if not, what are your plans for completing it? Because claiming that it's been done and completing it are two different things. And the public has a right to know.
Thomas, thanks. Lieutenant Governor.
Yeah, there was no erroneous claim. Even the university put out the statement that talked about what happened with it. It's been an error on, it's more so a mutual error, actually. Teacher retired, and the chair of the department actually passed away unexpectedly. So we ran into more issues than we were supposed to, and it's just paperwork thing that we have to get together, still working with the school to resolve that. And that's something that too was blown out of proportion. I'm the one that brought that up. I'm the one that mentioned it. I'm the one that came forward with that information. But that is not an issue. I actually had more credits than I needed to graduate. It's just a little small thing.
A little small thing, a paperwork issue. I think Thomas wants to know a timeline for when this will be resolved.
Yeah, I'm just waiting on the university now for us to get everything squared away. And honestly, I guess, you know, over the last 11, now 12 years, it was something that after I left school, I ended up getting a job and didn't think too much about it and kept working. And we'll get that sorted out with the school, hopefully sooner than later by this year.
Well, let's take another call.
This semester.
Okay, thank you. Let's take another call now. Tina in Spencer is joining us. Hi, Tina.
Good morning. I am calling, and I just turned the radio on, and I happened to catch the end of this gentleman that was talking about how these people do not have cars, so they can't work because they don't have a car. It's an excuse. I have a nephew that's 40-some years old that drove 2 miles on his bike. Now, this is Wisconsin, even in the winter, to his job for many years because he didn't have a car. So don't use that as an excuse. And another thing that I'm seeing, I worked at the biggest retailer there is with food, groceries, and other things, and I would see these people come in with food share stamps, and they would spend $400 because they have a family, and the woman would have her boyfriend with her, and they'd spend their $400 on junk.
So Tina is saying there is too much public assistance being offered. Lieutenant Governor.
Yeah, I mean, so with the car situation, like there are people who, you know, may have to go a little bit further than 2 miles. I think that is something that we shouldn't just write off because we do know examples of people who were able to get through it and figure out and persist and find a way, because those people do exist. But it's difficult for us to assume that's the case for everyone. Not everyone has the same physical ability to even be able to ride a bike 2 miles if that were the option. So I think that even aside from cars, because I still push the conversation towards that exposing the need for us to expand mass transportation options, and I think that's the camp that I rest firmly in. And when it comes to food stamps and when it comes to junk, I mean, that's a debate that we've had for a really long time, a debate that I participated in the state assembly when they tried to limit the types of food that people are able to eat. And fresh food is not always available, not always an option. And when people are hungry, sometimes you're going to pick the most satisfying option, the most filling option, not necessarily the most nutrition, because the most nutritious food, doesn't have the amount of calories to keep a person going for a full day, for a full week. So I think these are all considerations that we have to make. Would I love to see people eat more healthy? Of course, but even more so, I would love to see more healthy options available to people.
We're talking about state politics with the Lieutenant Governor Mandela Barnes. Still time for you, 800-642-1234. Lieutenant Governor, over the next several weeks, the legislature will be really busy wrapping up the law writing work for the session. And then there's this long break for election season. What are some of your top priorities before lawmakers head back to their districts?
Yeah, my priorities, well, one is going to be the same, and that's addressing climate change and working with the Climate Change Task Force. We hope to wrap up our work in August, at the end of August, and making sure that we get a full and complete count in the census is going to be vitally important. And third, I would say making sure that people are able to exercise their right to vote, pushing back on voter suppression efforts as they are happening all across our state, most notably and most explicitly with this attempt to remove over 200,000 people from the voter rolls. The goal is to create chaos, even if people are still able to register to vote. If they can hinder, if they can inconvenience somebody in any sort of way that will make them not want to vote or just not deal with it, then their job is done. And we have to make sure that that job is not done.
Well, let's take number one on your list, climate change. You chair a state task force that is aimed at reducing the effects in Wisconsin, and your first meeting was last month. You have, as you mentioned, a deadline to submit policy recommendations by August. Where do you hope for the group to focus its attention in the coming months?
We got a lot of things to think about and consider. You know, obvious expansion of renewable energy in this state. I think the goal for us to get to that the plan for us to get to that 2050 goal lies in so many people who were in that room. And that means that we have to reduce our reliance on fossil fuels. It also means that we should be able to give consumers more freedom. We have to look into issues and options like, you know, third-party solar, which would go a long way. We have to look at how do we get our agriculture and farming community more integrated into our plan, into our work. You look across the country where there's, you know, biodigestion, methane capture, carbon capture in general. And it's going to take private sector and public sector to make this work. And in our instance in the state where we had 8 years of no movement on increasing our renewable energy option, a lot of businesses made the smart choice because it worked for them. It worked for their bottom line. It was more efficient. They understand that people want to spend their money with environmentally conscious businesses and retailers. So they've already made the move. In many instances, their path is much more clear than ours is right now. And I don't even say this often, but this is where we can learn a lesson from them. And that's why we have a lot of members on the task force representing the business community as well. That means that we also have to think about the youth voices. That's why we have youth who are being more adamant than ever, and I think have given real life to this issue in a way that we hadn't seen before, the same way when it comes to ending gun violence. And we have to be cognizant of what our choices make that determine their future. This also means that we can look at how, unfortunately, we've lost so many family farms over the last several years, and what are some ways that we can help them stay afloat? And I think we've seen examples where, you know, wind energy has been very helpful, or solar arrays on farms that can help, you know, offset a lot of the losses that our farmers are facing. We have to think outside of the box. We have to think in ways that we have not had to think before. We have to challenge ourselves in new ways, because the crisis is more apparent than ever at this moment. I think that we also have to work double time. You know, at the Madrid UN Climate Conference talks, nations like the United States, the UK, China, they may scale down commitments. They didn't go as far that they could have gone.
I want to jump in here in the last seconds we have. During this year's election season, the census will also conduct its once-in-a-decade population survey, and the final tally could affect our representation in Congress or federal funding. What steps is Wisconsin taking to ensure its population is counted accurately?
Yeah, it will affect both, and Governor's going to have his census, his complete count committee. I know that there is a huge push in areas all across the state, and people should also know that there are employment opportunities available to them. As another quick plug, come work for the census. This is a great opportunity and really solid pay in certain areas across the state. But we are doing everything we can to make sure that all our people are counted. We're doing everything we can, especially in communities that have a reason to sort of be distrustful of what the process may be. Our immigrant communities should understand that, you know, we are here to work with them, not against them, and this is not going to be seen as some sort of trap. And
Lieutenant Governor, thank you for joining us. We're out of time.
Oh, all right. Thank you.
Mandela Barnes is Lieutenant Governor of Wisconsin. Coming up, the State Capitol Report continues. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network. On a Monday, you're with us for the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Thanks for joining us. He is one of three lawmakers nationwide who was 19 when elected in November 2018. Kalen Haywood is a Democratic member of the Assembly. He represents Milwaukee neighborhoods stretching from downtown to West Capitol Drive. So what questions do you have for State Representative Kalen Haywood? Do you live in Milwaukee? What do you think State Representative Haywood should know? Are you a millennial or another young voter? Do you feel that your voice is represented at the state capitol? We're at 800-642-1234. Representative Haywood, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you. Good morning. Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing well. Looking back at your first year in office, what surprised you about this job of being a state representative?
I realized that it was way more than a full-time job, but it was definitely a great job that is very dynamic and definitely keeps you on your toes.
How is it way more than you thought it would be? You know, what is causing those long hours?
So, you know, I mean, the job is, a multi-point job. You have the job in the Capitol building in Madison and inside the legislature between committees and the floor days, but also as a public servant, you also have a duty that is outside the building. Make sure you stay involved in your district with your constituents and your residents and staying involved. The people often think about the job inside the building, but the outside the building job is just as important. And that job does not stop, whether it's a holiday, whether it's weekend, whether it's rain, sleet, or snow. You have your own call, essentially. So you got to be involved, got to stay engaged, and make sure you're helping out when you can. Even last week, right after it got done snowing, I was driving down the street from my house to one of my big meetings, and I saw my elderly resident. She was outside trying to show her driveway. I was like, you know what? This is not right. This should not be like this. So I did a U-turn, got out the car, and took a brief 25-minute intermission in my drive to my meeting and got out and showed over the driveway. So it's the little things that count, but that's a part of the job as well that people don't really think about when they think that you're a state representative.
Did she know that you are a state representative?
Oh, yeah. So I knocked on her door numerous times. She's been to many town halls. So I actually just saw her at a town hall meeting, I believe a week before that. So she was happy. She saw me when we talked briefly about catching up about what had happened, but also she was happy that I was able to come by and help because it was really cold and the snow was really heavy.
You entered office hoping to spend more time with people in Milwaukee, regardless of whether it's shoveling for them or not, and really less time at the Capitol than your predecessors. Have you been able to do that?
Yes, it's been great. Since day one of the campaign, since May 31st, 2018, from the campaign trail to now, I've gotten to meet so many people from all across Milwaukee, but also across the state of Wisconsin and even the country. I think that experience itself has really grown me as an individual, meeting new people, learning about them, different aspects, different perspectives, meeting folks I agree with on certain points and meeting folks I don't agree with. I believe that no matter age, gender, race, political stance, I believe there's always something we can learn from everyone, and that's what I've done. I've met many, many, many different people, and that has given me a diverse perspective on a lot of issues.
You've also visited correctional facilities around the state. What has that been like?
Yes, it's been really eye-opening. You know, you go in and you travel the state, you go to some maximum facilities, some medium facilities, and also some minimum security level facilities. They're all different. However, when I get to go, I get to, one, talk to the staff, the warden, the staff at each facility that is interested in figuring out how their perspective on things, how they think that DOC is helping out, what they need, what they feel like is working. But also walking through the facility, and I mean literally the entire facility, I take the time to walk through the entire facility, and getting to talk to inmates. And, you know, hearing what inmates like, and hearing what they don't like, and hearing what we need to change. And I've seen definitely an uptick in inmate requests come to my office now after those trips. They send letters about problems they're having, and my office does everything we can to help out, whether they're from the district or they're not from the district. We will be able to obligation to help out, solve some of those issues. So definitely an eye-opener being in those facilities and talking to those inmates and being able to be there to help. A lot those inmates are in those facilities and they feel like no one's listening and no one's there to help. And I think when we go in those facilities, me and my staff, and we talk to them, they get some level of hope.
What have you learned about the process of authoring bills and getting them through the Capitol?
I've learned that the easiest part of that process is getting something drafted. That is not as easy as the drafting piece is easy. It's the introduction, it's the finding sponsors and co-authors, it's the getting it through committee, it's the getting it to the floor, and of course getting it passed in the assembly. So a lot of folks think that we can just draft bills all day, and we can, technically. We can technically get bills drafted and they can be typed up and whatnot, but the legwork comes in with getting that bill from being a drafted bill to a bill with support, a bill that can get to the committee, a bill that can get to the floor in the assembly, and then through the Senate and get to the governor's desk. It's a very, very long process, and it truly takes time, but once you figure it out and once you get it done, it's a process that was definitely worth it.
We're talking with State Representative Kalen Haywood on the State Capitol Report. He represents downtown and northeast Milwaukee neighborhoods. Do you live or work in Milwaukee? What do you think lawmakers in Madison should be addressing right now? Join in at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Representative Haywood, you are a first-term Democrat in the legislature, and this is a legislature controlled by Republicans. What has that experience been like as you, try to address bills and draft bills and work across the aisle?
There's definitely been a partisan divide in Madison. It's very rare. We can't deny it. There's this whole D versus R piece. And a lot of times it's based on what you have behind your name. That's the real fight. But I have realized a couple things. One, most of the time on some of the important issues, we don't always disagree on the issue. So we all want our students to have the best education possible. We all want our residents to have jobs. We all want our residents to be safe. We don't disagree on those facts. It's really about how we accomplish that goal, making sure people are safe, people are educated, and also have jobs. This is about how we accomplish what we disagree on. But I realized that no matter if it's a D or an R, just because of the difference of political party, we may disagree on, let's say, 80% of the things we talk about. But that 20% that we do agree on, that's what I try to focus on. So, you know, it has been a little crazy with the partisan divide, but I have realized there are some great colleagues outside the aisle who talk with regularly and work with to actually get things done. And there are people who are willing to put the D and the R aside and actually get the work done for the people we represent. There's a good amount of folks who agree with putting people before politics. And I noticed that. I found that some of those individuals, I hope to find more. But those are the ones that I work with on both sides of the aisle to figure out how can we accomplish goals and get things done for the people that we represent.
One example might be the human trafficking bill working through the legislature. You've worked with Representative Amy Loudenbeck and State Senator Dale Coinga. How has that effort been?
Representative Loudenbeck and Senator Coinga have been a great help. So we're preparing to introduce the bill officially. The bill is focused on combating human trafficking. It's a real issue in the state of Wisconsin. And with Wisconsin targeted to get many, many major events, it makes Wisconsin an even bigger target for human trafficking. We're already a hub now, but it makes us a bigger target and makes us a possibility to be a bigger hub than we are now. So being more proactive than being reactive. We don't want to wait until that time happens to now take steps. So being more proactive, they've both been great help. But other than Loudenbeck, it definitely has been someone who's taught me new things about the human trafficking world and what I should know. And some suggestions we've had, she's been a great component to this bill. So they both have been great. The process has been great. I think this is an issue that most agree on. We don't want human trafficking to become a bigger issue than it is. It's about how we get it done. And I think the bill we were working on would get the lodging industry involved in getting them to do training with their employees in the lodging industry. So whether it be the front desk staff, the security staff, the cleaning staff, the upper management, getting them to do training with all their staff to, one, not only be aware of human trafficking, but also know what do you do once you see it. I know that even in my district, we have a problem. And before I ran, constituents would tell me, I had a constituent called named Martha Love. And Mrs. Love was like, you know, Kaylin, when you get in, we're going to have this talk about human trafficking. I said, Mrs. Love, we're going to do it. And now when I got in, I followed, stayed true to my word, and we talked and I did some training. And now things I would see before that, I now see differently. And I truly believe human trafficking is one of those things that, well, you can never be too sure if it's human trafficking or not, but definitely you're able to detect signs more once you have that training and that awareness before when you didn't.
Representative, you're a Democrat. Governor Evers is a fellow Democrat. Have you been working with the governor's administration on any issues this year?
Yes. Governor Evers, Hamilton, and Governor Barnes are great help. So the human trafficking piece is one of the things we're working on together. So human trafficking is one. I'm looking to possibly even get our capital interns paid. I think I would not be where I am today without my internships in high school. And I was a capital intern. So I believe that that's one thing I'm very important about. The governor has expressed interest in supporting. So I want to say one thing about this current administration. Between the governor's administration, where between the governor and lieutenant governor, but also the departments, they have been a great help when it comes to vetting out all these ideas and these bills. If the departments are going to get involved, I make sure to call them early on. Like, hey, this is what I'm thinking about doing. What are your thoughts? Let me know. How does this work? How does this make sense? So the departments are always a great support. They want to come into the district and do town halls with residents. A couple of the secretaries are my actual constituents. So the departments are great. The administration is great. They're definitely a big help.
We're talking with Representative Kaylin Haywood from Milwaukee. He is the youngest member of the state legislature and among the youngest lawmakers in the country. We're looking back at his first year in office. What questions do you have for him? Do you live or work in Milwaukee? What do you want your representative to know? Join in 800-642-1234. Representative Kaylin Haywood, a reported fan of talk radio and Drake. We're delivering for him talk radio and Drake's hit One Dance. And Stay Cap continues in just a moment on the Ideas Network. OT, there's never much love when we go OT. I pray to make it back in one piece. I pray. That's why I need a one dance. Got a Hennessy in my hand. One more time before I go. Higher powers taking a hold on me. I need a one dance. Got a Hennessy in my hand. One more time before I go. Higher powers taking a hold on me. Baby, I like your stuff. It is the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Democrat Kaylin Haywood won the 16th district seat in the State Assembly in the 2018 midterms. At age 19, he defeated four rival candidates while studying business administration at Cardinal Stritch University. And he knew his public service dream was possible in fourth grade. Fourth grade, watching President Obama's inauguration on TV at school. What do you want to know about Representative Haywood's first year in office? Are you a millennial or a young voter? Do you feel that your voice is being represented at the Capitol? Join in 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. And Representative Haywood stays with us. Let's go to the phones now. Dorothy is joining us from Milwaukee. Hi, Dorothy.
Hi.
What's on your mind?
I'm calling because I'm a senior. I'm 81. I've always voted. And my concern now, from my point of view, is the lack of attention to us seniors. the care that we need in, to stay in our homes, the care that we need and transportation that we need back and forth to get to our appointments, the lack of the ability to get food so we can stay and eat in our homes. I don't see the attention that's being paid to this. It does seem to be geared toward the millennials and the middle, so-called school-age children.
Yeah, Dorothy.
Where does this come? Where does our aid and
being prioritized? Yeah, thank you so much, Dorothy. Representative, Wisconsin has an aging population, and Dorothy's wondering, you know, what legislation will help people age in place with home health, transportation? How are we addressing older populations in Wisconsin?
Well, first of all, Ms. Dorothy, thank you for being up this morning and calling in to the show and raising the question. I do agree with you. We do need to do a lot more when it comes to taking care of our senior population, or I like to call our more wise individuals in our community. We need to do a lot more. Make sure that you all are able to be in your homes and be comfortable and have what you need, only not in your homes, but also be able to get back and forth to doctor appointments. For me, I have a couple senior homes in my district, and I make sure I get to those senior homes. Cause I will be honest, I don't have an answer. So what I do is I go to the folks that do have an answer. I try to make the monthly meetings to senior homes in my district and talk to my residents to figure out, what can I do for you? That's the question I ask. What do you need me to do? So I do believe that we need to do more. I'm going to make sure we can help support that power population, because you all need support too. I mean, you all made it possible for us to be where we are today. You helped pave the way. So I don't have the answer for what exactly we can do. I know Medicaid expansion is a thing we can do to make sure we make sure folks still have access to health, great quality health care. But on a day-to-day, I'm open to hear any ideas that you may have. And my office is always available to hear ideas we have. I'm willing to do whatever it takes to make sure we take care of our seniors.
Yeah, legislatively, what are Democrats' priorities for older Wisconsinites?
I know for me personally, I think one part of my platform that speaks to the seniors in our community is safety. When I was out on doors, I think safety was a big thing to have from literally everyone, but especially our seniors. My grandmother, I call one of my senior advisors. We talk almost 2 or 3 times a weekend. I sit down, I talk with her about what I'm working on, what do you think we should do next? And she gives some great ideas, some great insight, a stern talking to when I need it. But I think safety is super important. There was one constituent I had, she was, 74. And I was talking with her, I went to her house, she stays on 24th Street and Capitol Drive. And she still works to this day because she has to pay for her medication and she works at Master Lock. But I was talking to her and I actually started crying on the campaign trail because she reminded me of my grandmother. But two, once she had to work still, that kind of made me sad. That she had to work still just because she had to pay for medication that she could not afford if she were to retire. But two, the other sad fact was she told me that when she would come home from work, a house that she's owned for decades, she didn't feel safe sitting outside on her porch. Mm. She couldn't come home from a long day of work and sit outside on the porch in a neighborhood that she had invested in for so long. And she was a pivotal part of the neighborhood. And that bothered me. Because if my grandmother told me she just didn't feel safe sitting outside on her porch, I would feel some type of way. I think that's for all our seniors. Make sure our seniors are safe. It's super important. So one of my things for my platform as a Democrat, I think making sure our seniors are safe and that we do whatever it takes to make sure that our streets are safe. I think that affects all age groups, but especially our seniors.
We're talking with Representative Kalen Haywood. He represents downtown and northeast Milwaukee neighborhoods. Still time for you, 800-642-1234. Representative, there's been this recent rise in carjacking and reckless driving, and it has authorities really concerned in Milwaukee. A city-county task force is considering whether to recommend stricter penalties. Do you support stricter penalties for carjackers or reckless drivers?
So when I was, way back in the day when I was a lot younger, younger than 20, I was on the city of Milwaukee Youth Council. And one of the things I took a stance against was reckless driving and car thefts. While I was on the youth council, we started a a PSA campaign called hashtag no free rides. It came from the whole Uber idea. You get the first ride. It was, I think, $20 off, up to $20 off. And a lot of folks are thinking they can steal a car, and because of some confusion with the MPD's pursuit policy, they thought it would be a free ride. They would steal a car, joyride it, drop it off, and keep going. So I think that this is an issue for decades, at least for years, at least. I'm pretty sure decades, but definitely for the last couple of years, and we have to take a holistic approach at it. I believe that we need some things when it comes to enforcement, but I also believe that it's not just penalties. It's also so reach out to these young people that are still in the cars and who are reckless driving, figure out why they're doing it, one, and then two, how can we help with, between community building and resources and support? How can we help change this narrative? This has become a cultural norm for a lot of younger people. This is a generational thing, I believe, that we're doing right now. I think it's happened for decades. This is now, many people today, this has become a cultural norm. It's become the cool thing to do. And we have to work on shifting that cultural norm. That's something that penalties won't do. We have to work on boots on the ground work, connecting and relationship building with young people to change the narrative of what's cool. So I think that's why changing the narrative is super important about what we should be doing, and I think that's super important.
You represent part of the zip code 53206. That's the Milwaukee zip code that's infamous for its high incarceration rate. What could state lawmakers be doing to help this zip code, to help 53206?
I think the one thing, kind of back to your last question, doing more than just penalties. We have to make sure we work on one, I think, looking at a holistic approach, education. Whether it be K through 12 education, making sure that our students are educated, also our community. We're not knocking on doors. The lack of information that was delivered to the community was very present. So educating folks about what's happening. Jobs are super important. And in 53206, I have residents who are working two or three jobs, and they're working those two or three jobs to save up money and buy the nice new car they saw on TV. No, they're working those jobs to make ends meet. And if that car they do have, which is not in the best shape, happens to get a flat tire, and a new tire, they might miss an important deal that month, whether it be the rent, the lights. They might miss a meal. And I think that's unacceptable for anyone to have to live that way. I think we have to do better to make sure we deliver family-sustaining jobs. And also housing is super important, I believe. Making sure that people have quality, affordable housing. I believe we are parts of our environment. If I come outside every morning and I see green grass, beautiful homes, as a toddler, as a school-age kid, as an adult, as a senior, I think it affects us unconsciously of how we're going to operate today. It puts us in a certain headspace. In 53206, we have areas in the zip code where you can't go on a block and not find a boarded-up house or a vacant house on the block or empty field. We got to change that. We got to ensure people have that quality housing. I think it's super important. So I think between housing, jobs, and especially education, I think we can see some things change around. And that's something that government can do.
Representative, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Kalen Haywood is a Democratic member of the State Assembly. He represents Milwaukee neighborhoods stretching from downtown to West Capitol Drive. Just ahead, we discuss the legacy of Martin Luther King Jr. as this day commemorates his life and work. Plus, it's the 100th anniversary of the ACLU. We talk with the head of the ACLU of Wisconsin. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is the State Capitol Report on The Morning Show. You're listening to the Ideas Network.